Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us for December's Exotic Club webinar. I'm delighted to welcome back to Webinar Club our speaker for today, lecturer and clinical manager of Exotic Animal and Wildlife Clinic at the Royal Dick School of Veterinary Studies, Kevin Eatwell. Thank you, Kevin. I'm now going to hand over to you.
Thank you so much for that introduction. Today we're going to be looking at why you might want to use CT in avian patients. And I think it's worth us looking at the first instance here, looking at what options we have available when we're dealing with sick birds, how useful they are, so we can sort of reflect on where CT may or may not fit into the management of these cases. And obviously, blood work is something that's done quite regularly for avian patients. It obviously is quite useful. I suppose to some extent, a lot of the things that we'll be looking at for these on the sick birds would be the total white cell count, toxic activity, things like that. And what we're looking at really on these is how sick are you? What's the systemic response to this disease process? And I think there's always that difference between a diagnosis and a prognosis, and we need to make sure that we're covering both with the cases we're dealing with. We obviously use bile acids a lot, uric acid a lot for the birds as well, which obviously are great for sort of ballpark ideas of hepatic and renal function. And okay, you can throw calcium into here, you can throw electrolytes into here, but I think, beyond, I guess, those main things we're looking at, a lot of the blood work can be a bit variable and non-specific. The next thing, of course, you've got on your list is how you're going to get blood from your patients and whether this is going to be a conscious blood draw, which, okay, waterfowl, dead simple, but you may find with some of the smaller cetaceans, for example, or some of the more fractious birds of prey, that maybe an anaesthetic is something you're looking at doing. And again, if you've got a sick patient, do I want to anaesthetize you to get a blood draw? That said, the length of time it's going to take me to get that sample is very quick, very speedy, so it's going to be a fairly short-lived experience for the bird. But basically, I think blood work does sit fairly high up on our list of diagnostics when we're dealing with a sick bird. And part of the rationale for that might be is, I guess it is relatively non-invasive, but equally it's something that if I'm going to send it away to the lab and it's going to take 2 days to get back, then maybe I want to send it now because by the time I get desperate for that sample, I'm hopefully going to have results already pending, already confirmed that it's got to the lab and it's being processed. The next on our list is radiography, really, and I guess it's useful, it's widely used. You've got the same discussion: is this something I can do conscious? Is this something I need to do under anaesthesia? And that does depend again on your patient, what views you're looking for. For most of the birds, to get decent positioning, to get clear images that you can interpret properly, then you do need to be anaesthetizing this bird. You may be here a little bit longer than you would be for a blood draw. So in these cases, maybe this is a bird now you want to be intubating to have a secure airway and put monitoring on. So this is a sort of taking you the next sort of level for them. Now, if you are doing conscious radiographs, then okay, yeah, we can have a look for foreign bodies. We might see a metallic object somewhere. Maybe we've got an ascites in an egg-laying hen, for example, in a chicken, and we want to have a look and see how bad the ascites looks, or is there an egg present in there, for example. So we can get away with conscious views, but we have to appreciate when we're dealing with the birds of prey or we're dealing with the cetaceans, a conscious view may be of limited benefit. But obviously, for radiography, we're looking at a lateral view here. You've got to make sure your wings are up and nicely done. You've got to make sure your legs are parallel and pull backwards. Your thoracic girdle needs to be perfectly aligned as well. And I think probably the only thing in this bird, I'd be moving the legs back a little bit further, maybe. But to get a decent view of a lateral view that you can interpret, you've got to have pretty perfect positioning. And this eliminates a lot of the possibility for doing this conscious. And the second view you're going to be looking at really then is a VD view. So the birds, obviously, again, you've got them on their back. You've got to have them positioned beautifully so you get symmetry in your scapulae, coracoids, and clavicles at the front, so you can evaluate lung fields, evaluate air sacs and things. Leg and wing positioning obviously also has to be fairly accurate. So again, this really to get a decent view is an anaesthetized bird to enable you to do that. And as we said, your exception to these rules are conscious radiographs. So a classical one here with a Mutzon Swan signet here is looking for a hook, looking for lead. We're going to take a DV view, have a look for foreign bodies, or maybe GI gut feel backing up because of botulism or something like that, for example, or lead toxicity. These can be quite useful. We use a lot of these for the chickens as well. But again, for the birds of prey and the citizens, conscious radiography can be difficult to make a judgment call on. And I suppose this is where the difficulty comes in. If we're looking at this golden eagle, for example, that's come in to see us, that clearly is having some dyspnea evident at rest, it's mouth breathing. We look at it here on the glove, and I think this bird is a little bit forlorn in terms of its visual appearance. You're thinking, I know this bird has a clinical problem, it's dyspneic and what have you, and I need to get a diagnosis here. I need to be able to help this bird. But obviously, the presentation there may be a little bit off-putting. But ultimately, anaesthesia in birds is relatively safe. You've got an airway secured, capnograph present, put an IV line in, you've got thermal support. Maybe that's not so hostile a thing to be doing. And equally, if I need to treat you or get a diagnosis, then maybe an anaesthetic is something that's a necessity in these cases. And this is just a view. Now, this actually is a snowy owl now, not the golden eagle, but this is just a VD view. And again, on looking at this, there's a few things here that strike me as one. I think we got some hyperinflation of air sacs here in this particular bird, but equally, I do not like the look of this. Don't know what that is, but that shouldn't be there. Okay, and given this is a golden eagle, given it's a snowy owl, whatever, obviously, I'm thinking of this being some air sac related infection. Aspergillus obviously being quite high on the list. And again, you get the lateral view to try and get an idea of where this is, and this is the lesion here. Okay, we've got a leg that slipped forward, so this isn't the best of X-ray, but the fact of the matter is this shouldn't be here, and I need to evaluate that in more detail. So the imaging here has helped me take it forward. But I think when we're looking at these, we would be going, I still don't know what that is. Yes, okay, I'll do a blood draw. It's got a high white cell count. It's got elevated monocytes. Well, that's lovely. It means it's got chronic disease. But to get disease that's produced to this level radiographically, I would expect it to be chronic. So having a monocytosis doesn't tell me what it is. It might tell me how sick you are. It doesn't tell me what this is. And I suppose, rightly or wrongly, I love endoscopy. It's pure and simple. We do a lot of endoscopy. It's great. You have the opportunity here to get the kit in relatively easy. A technique can be developed, and this allows you to do so much more with these patients. And I guess what you've got is where we're looking at this sort of lesion on that X-ray is I can go and look at it. I can see what that pathology is. I can record that pathology on a video or a still image. If I want to take a sample from that, I've got cytology, I've got histopath, I can send it for culture, or I can send it for viral PCR. I can go and target that lesion specifically and say, let's find out what that is. And I suppose you can, if you turn it around radiographically, for example, part of the point for looking at doing radiography in these is where is this lesion? where is the best approach, my endoscope to go? And certainly I've historically been and saying radiography has one purpose, that is to put an endoscope in. It's just to make sure that it's safe and where you want to go. So this is a valuable tool for the avian diagnostic workup. But of course, this is surgical. I need my bird anaesthetized for this. I need to be plucking some feathers and having a surgical prep area. This is going to be going through into the left-hand side of the bird, either into the caudal thoracic or abdominal air sac. And this obviously then is going to give me the information that I want in terms of what is this, what does it look like, what is it? And obviously for these, we use rod lens telescopes, better than the older style endoscopes, better light transmission. We have a slight angle on this endoscope, which allows you to look around much more. And this is the sort of image you're going to be getting coming through on your endoscope, which allows you to have a very detailed view of pathology and extent of what's going on inside that bird. With the 30-degree endoscopes, 30-degree angle endoscopes, we can then have a exam sheath, surgical sheath put on, and now we're in a position that we can go and get biopsies and samples. This biopsy forceps comes into the centre of the field of view, so if I want to sample pathology that I've seen on radiography, then I can go in, visualise it, and have a targeted sample in a relatively safe manner. And of course, this is lovely. This is going to give me a PCR. This is going to give me a histological diagnosis or a culture result taken in a sterile fashion from inside the bird, for example. So all of these things mean endoscopy is high on our list. I suppose the question then is what limitations might there be from endoscopy if we love it so much? Where's its deficits? What is it going to be missing for us? And okay, we have to anaesthetise the patient, as we said, for endoscopy to be done. That may be a limitation that you're considering, same as it might be a limitation for a blood draw or for radiography. And then we think, okay, let's look at upper respiratory tract disease here as an example. And I've got a grey here with rhinoliths and things. And I'm thinking, how extensive is this? What level of pathology is here? And endoscopy, I can't fit it into a sinus. At best, I can look at the coana, maybe. Ultrasound, it's in bone, should be full of air, which makes life hard. And radiography, because I'm superimposing both sides of the skull, I don't really get details of how bad this infection is. How much bone is involved? Is this sinusitis eating into the bone of the head? I sort of kind of get limited by that. If we look at another case here in this yellow-fronted Amazon here, we clearly have a lot of facial distortion and bone remodeling around this nares. I think we can see that clinically. I think this is a case you'd look at and go, oh, this probably is going to be surgical. There's going to be solid pus in here. I'm going to have to go in and physically remove this. But again, I've no idea of the nature and extent of that. It's one of these things where you're going to look at it and go, I suspect this is surgical. Let's just go in surgical and see what we find and all the rest of it. And you're hoping you're going to clear everything out and, you know, there isn't a raging osteomyelitis in the skull of this bird. But obviously, if there is a raging osteomyelitis in the skull of the bird, that's going to kind of have an impact in your prognosis and treatment duration and planning. And there's no way of knowing that surgically. And again, it boils down to even you say, well, that's okay. I'll do some cytology. That's lovely. You're going to see a neutrophilic response. Well, it's got a sinusitis. That's not a surprise. And you might grow a bug out that may or may not be multi-resistant. Again, not a surprise. But the question is, how severe an extent is the nature of infection? And your culture result doesn't tell you whether it's invading bone or not, or how widespread this infection is in that lesion. And equally, we take another case here in a young grey parrot here, big puffy eye, but no overt signs of massive remodelling, but we've got sort of mucousy globby stuff coming out of nose. So here we're kind of going down the route of this probably is just a sinus full of material that just needs blasting out with no bone involvement. But again, how much material in there is, I don't know. Is it bilateral? Is it unilateral? Am I just looking at the worst side? Or do we generally have some globe involvement? Again, I don't know with the modalities we've discussed so far. And the next thing then on my list is, what about lower respiratory tract disease? I mean, we can endoscope the trachea under GA. So if you've got a tracheal foreign body, you've got an obstruction, you've got a aspergillus, something like that, or tracheal trauma or a stricture, we can evaluate that. You might not see these things radiographically, but we can evaluate them endoscopically. And obviously, going down, you're able to get a decent look at the end of the trachea. And in a bigger bird, like here with this goshawk, maybe a little bit of a view into the main bronchi and see what's going on behind your syrinx. But that's kind of as far down the trachea as I can go. Now, you might be sitting here going, well, that doesn't really matter. I've got a bird that's full of air. I have beautiful access into the lower respiratory tract now from the other side that I can evaluate this bird. And then I can go and look throughout all the air sacs of the bird. I can go and look directly at the lung surface and see the lungs. I can, in a larger bird, manipulate and feed the end of my endoscope into the ostea. So I can actually have a look in here at the lung tissue a little bit deeper to see what's going on. And if I've got acute or changes in the lung, then a lot of those changes are around the ostea at the, if it's inflammation from an inhaled toxin, for example, then that hits this section first before it goes into the air sac and then goes back across here. So looking at the ostea and up into the ostea can be very useful in determining nature and extent of lung disease. So, do I really need to do more? Is this going to give me the information that I need? And I think when you're looking at that, it is impossible to get endoscopically, even radiographically, to be honest, a decent view of what is happening between my syrinx and the ostea. And you can have a significant amount of pathology can be missed at that point. And certainly going back in time, maybe a decade or so before when I didn't have access to CT, we had a certain percentage of birds that would be presenting. You'd evaluate them radiographically, evaluate them with blood work, evaluate them with endoscopy. You get a diagnosis on visual appearance or cytology or PCR. But there always was a percentage of birds that would fail to respond. And with experience, I guess, you'd be going backwards and going, you're doing worse than I would expect you to based on my endoscopic findings. There's always was a few of those that would do that. And on post-mortem findings, you'd find out why. Because you were missing pathology that you couldn't see endoscopically. And thus, your management of that case or your prognosis for that case would have been altered had you identified that pathology, which you were unable to do so. And then the next thing on our list really is down to ultrasound. I don't think we should eliminate ultrasound completely. We will use ultrasound here for liver disease, for Psyllomycosis, egg peritonitis in these chickens, for example. We will use that, but I think you've got specific cases where you're thinking that you've got fluid available in the peritoneal cavity with the obviously air sacs being compressed, whereby you can make use of that modality. So there is specific cases, and obviously heart disease, there are cases there. So given the, I guess, range of limitations that we've got with those diagnostics, we've now got to think about what can CT bring to the table. Well, CT is anatomical in the same way that radiography is anatomical. This isn't giving us functions. This is giving us anatomy and distortions in that anatomy. and it's giving us distortions to the nearest millimeter. Now, you might think that's a bit of a strange thing to say because a millimeter is quite a small amount, but that does give us some limitations and perhaps touch on why routine CT does have some limitations in that regard. But of course, what CT won't do is allow us to see inflammation. And we don't get biopsy per se from CT. And it's the same with I guess, with X-ray or with ultrasound as well. If you're going to do biopsies and you're using that imaging to guide you, you kind of have to image the animal, work out where you want to go, put a little marker across on it, redo your imaging to say, yes, I'm in the right place, put your needle in, redo your imaging to confirm your needle is at the center of the lesion that you can see on the imaging, and then aspirate and sample. So it's not quite so clear cut. Ultrasound, of course, this can be done real time, which is great. But certainly for CT and radiography, you're kind of having to take an image, take a sample, retake an image and see what's happened. The other thing is, if you want to look at function, which obviously ultrasound does give you, we can do function on CT. We can do function on radiography. To do that, I need contrast medium to allow me to look at GI motility or renal function or things like that. So in order to get an IV contrast line in the bird to do that and have the bird immobilized for that sort of process, then I kind of need you anaesthetized to do that. And then you're then looking at a room like this where your CT is housed. Now, those of you that are dealing with the birds, I guess there's a couple of things really with a setup like this. Is one, my bird could escape. That's the first point. The second point I've got is I can't be in this room. Okay, when the CT is running, I can't be in this room with that patient. I have to be sufficiently confident that my anaesthetized bird can be ignored and left. So my bird is being set up with its anaesthetic, and I'm leaving the room with the bird in there and leaving it alone. Now, okay, that's not such a crisis to some extent. For this particular grey here, for example, what we do have is capnograph set up. The room is set up with visualization from, I guess, from the computer side of things, so you're looking through glass into that. And if we're using a capnograph, for example, on an anaesthetized patient, then we position a pulse ox or what have you, such that the screen is infinitely available that we can see through the window, so we can watch the capnograph trace, which I guess would be most useful, because that will give us a real-time thing going through. So capnography for these works very well. Pulse oximetry, Doppler, all these other things you might use, much as you might think, yeah, let's go for that. The downside you've got is they're metallic. And as soon as you have got metal things in the middle of your CT, that's going to ruin your visualization to some extent. So for these, if you're going to monitor an anaesthetized patient in a CT machine, you're probably down to capnography. You need to have an airway. And if you don't have an airway, then obviously that makes life very problematic indeed. But if we look at an anaesthetized bird on the first video, for example, then basically we're in the scenario that you're able to see and visualize the lesion that's needed. So in this particular example, we have got a big lesion here that's clearly evident in the sinus of this bird. And I'll just, if we could just bring up video one, I can show video one to these guys. Just bear with while we're getting video one put up. Ah, brilliant. Perfect. Sorry, that's me being silly. So this is a video of the site that we've got here, and again, just flowing through that, you can see we've got it tubed, we've got an airway secure, and the lesion is fairly evident. And we can look at and see how much bone involvement is going on for them. But of course, without contrast, it's very difficult to get the abscess captured or things highlighted on that. So again, it's boiling down to how much do I want from that. But you are able to get with an anaesthetized bird quite a detailed view of the sinuses to plan surgery, to look at extent of what you're doing as well. And that works quite nice to see differences between left and right side and how much sort of level of pathology that you've got going on here. And equally, while we were here, just an interesting point was when you're looking at the shoulder tubes, you get a very good idea of how much your tracheal lumen is altered by the presence of a tube. And you can also see here when you've got a little bit at the end and this tube has been far too small, how this could cause focal irritation in the bird as well, leading to tracheal damage. So it is quite an interesting thing to look at. The other downside of an anaesthetized bird is, depending on how you're positioning them, in a lot of cases, you're going to be positioning that bird upside down in a very similar way to what you would do for radiography, because that's kind of your default position. Because if you're positioning them the other way up, your concern is you've then got the bird trying to lift its body against its keel. I can't be in there with this bird because the bird is, you know, in CT radiation exposure. Equally, if I'm using a mechanical ventilator for the bird, then the distance between the bird and the mechanical ventilator has to be a reasonable distance to stop that ventilator from interfering with the CT as well. So to some extent with these, they're on tubes, they're on capnography, they're on plastic ET circuits, because everything then that's metallic can be kept a distance away so it doesn't interfere with your images. So for some of these, you have to account depending on the bird position. So for example, here we've got a bird on its back here, everything falls onto the lung fields. So when we're looking here and we're looking at this lesion here, this has fallen down. And much as it's in an abnormal place, it's like, well, the bird is upside down on its back. So I would expect things to fall down because you don't have a diaphragm. So when you're looking at positional for these, then generally upside down birds are far more confusing than birds the right way up. But birds the right way up clearly have to try and breathe, and that may be difficult for them as well. But of course, metal does become a problem for us again with these cases, which we start to have to think about. And if I'm going to put a bird of prey through, okay, it's used to standing on its block perch. I mean, that's brilliant. That's awesome. But that's metal. That's going to completely destroy everything on here. So when these guys are going through, you've got to then think of how can I get you to sit to go through the machine? If I'm not going to do an anaesthetic on you, let's suggest I'm going to hood you. I've got to put you on a plastic perch and then send you through the machine. And the plastic perch has to be just the right height so you don't hit your head, which obviously for some of the bigger birds would be problematic because they're taller than the CT will allow. And I guess these work okay. Depending on your bird, depends on how it sits. But you know, you can position them and get these guys going through. Again, you have to walk away and leave them. So you want to make sure they're secure. You want to make sure that what you've set up is not going to fall over. And in these cases, it works. This is I found this amusing picture, so I just put it through first. But basically, you've got the bird here. You can see the hood, see its head. You've got the plastic perch starting to come through. So this is the sort of first images you get coming through. But of course, the point here is you do have metal. And this metal, as you can see here, is causing quite a lot of distortion on your images you're going to get with your CT. And this is just really making the eloquent point of how we got to try and minimize that. I know you can imagine how a block perch or a bow perch here would just completely distort the whole thing. So plastic is the way forward in these circumstances. The other beauty you get with CT, and this is just thinking now of lower respiratory tract disease for you, is the detail of pathology you get is quite unique. And okay, this is on a high resolution image, which we do need. But when you're looking at lungs, for example, I get a very, very clear amount of the amount of consolidation or soft tissue filling within this lung tissue of the nature and extent of that, which you'd never get that degree of visualization. And again, more lesions here. You'd never get that detail on X-ray. And you wouldn't see this on CT because all on ultrasounds, endoscopy, sorry, because I am simply just looking at the lung surface. You're not going to see back into how much detail of lung pathology you've got. And again, just another view here. Again, just showing you pathology here. But again, what I've got here is I can see that I have a beautifully thickened air sac running across here, which I shouldn't have as well. And again, this is anatomical. I can't tell you what's causing this infection, whether this is aspergillus, whether it is an air sacculitis, whether it's bacterial or something else. But I can tell you how much of this tissue has become anatomically distorted by the disease process. So I suppose the question we've now got is if we can pop a bird of prey onto a plastic perch, run it through, and I can get really nice detail of its lung fields, then that's quite useful to me. And bear in mind, in contrast to the dogs and cats, and the mammal and the reptiles to some extent, these lungs don't move. It's the air sacs that utilize movement to push the air across the lungs. The lungs themselves aren't expanding and contracting. So the quality of lung fields we can get on these images is okay, limited by that 1 millimeter slice that you're taking. But nevertheless, you can get very, very detailed images of the lung field on these. And of course, that's very useful for us in terms of prognosis. So the question is, how do I get the little African grey here or somebody like it into this machine? How do I manage to make this work? And bear in mind, if I've got this patient anaesthetized, I've got risk of escape, I've got remote monitoring, and to be honest, it's a nightmare trying to keep a room that big warm enough for an anaesthetized cytosine to be going through. It's impossible. If you think back to when you're doing your surgery or X-rays or whatever, hopefully you have small rooms that are quite compact that you can keep warm and extra heating around. In this setup, this room it's in is big enough to house the whole thing, big enough to housing dogs and cats. It's got horses coming in through the other end from an outside door, sticking their head through this machine. You just cannot heat it effectively. So if I can find a way that I can do CT and get meaningful results conscious in these individuals, then that's the way forward. So I guess your first option is, you know what? We're going to shove you in a box. We're going to cover you in towels and we're going to chuck that through the CT machine and we're going to see what happens. And we're going to tape it in place because we don't need to be rattling about and falling off. And we're just going to run that through the machine and see what comes out in the wash in terms of quality of images that we get. And we're just going to play video two now. And we'll just have a little look and see what happens on video two. This is the CT conscious of the head. And so we're looking for sinuses here in a bird. And as we're going through, we do tend to get, I guess, reasonable images coming through. If we have a little look at video three here, same sort of deal. But again, we've got movement coming through here on this bird as well. So when you're looking at trying to get head images, the birds, the cytosines can be problematic because I need to be still to be able to see these lesions. And that can be problematic. Now, I suppose what's changed our mind a little bit, and this boils down to who's doing the CT and what CT do you have. We've got a brand new machine that's been put in, which the rate and speed at which we can do CT now is probably a quarter of the time it used to take, if not an eighth of the time it used to take. In other words, even when you're doing high resolution detail images, the time is limited. So even if your bird does do a little wiggle, partway through, you probably still have three quarters of your data is more than sufficient for what you'd want. So you just run the sequence again, and what you're hoping is the bird wiggles at a different time point, match the two together, and then you have a detailed sequence that's perfect. So the amount of radiation exposure they get to because they're small is limited, the time involved is very limited, and a lot of the cases now we get through on a first run and have detailed sinus anatomy without the need for an anaesthetic, whereas going back 3 or 4 years, we maybe would have needed an anaesthetic because the duration of this process is far longer. If we have a little look at video four, what we're going to show you on video four basically is a running through looking at the lung fields coming through, looking to identify nature and extent of pathology on this little video for you. And as we go through on this bird, you can just see as it comes through really, really nice all the way down, right the way down through to cloaca. And again, this bird hasn't wiggled throughout this entire process. We've just got very clear data right the way through to evaluate from start through to finish. I suppose what we have for the rabbits, which we use, is the mousetrap, which works very well. And this basically is where we would squash our rabbits into that. We'd have an air vein catheter in, that would be attached to the power infuser, which is then administering contrast IV at a set pressure. And that tends to work very well for the rabbits. The question is the birds still bounce around in this box? And I suppose then you start looking at how can I make this bird sit still? And I think instead of shoving in a box full of towels, what we've really moved to now is we're wrapping the bird up like you're trying to dispose of a body in a carpet. And this tends to provide much more secure physical restraint of the bird. The bird feels more secure. And if you get the pressure just right, then your bird realistically can't move backwards and forwards at all, really, if that makes sense. Although you still may get a little bit of a head shimmy depending on the case. But in those sort of circumstances, we are able to utilize the CT machine quite nicely. We get them in the mousetrap. What we're able to do with these as well is this basically is oxygen coming in right at the head end of that patient. They've been wrapped in the rug, packed in, secured together. Then obviously this can then go through that machine, which is quite nice for getting the detail that we want. Slight downside here, of course, is they may still wibble, and depending on how they are within the towel, some of these will start rotating upside down and backwards as they're trying to roll themselves out to escape the restraint that they have been put into. But the beauty of this, of course, I think realistically, is that we are getting images. Without the need for a GA, sometimes on a crashed, markedly sick, collapsed, dyspneic patient, we can get very good detail of anatomical problems, if you like, or extent of anatomical change on the respiratory tract or GI tract with the bird conscious. It's immediate, it's instant. I'm not waiting for blood results to come back. I don't have to anaesthetize you and prep surgery. You can just go straight through the machine and give me the details. And just on this one, for example, I've just brought this one up here because this is the start of the syrinx, giving you an idea of extent of where the syrinx sits. I get a really nice view of trachea and syrinx here. And obviously, coming back into lung fields as well. I appreciate we're focusing on avian respiratory tract, but I think that's probably one of the main indications that you're going to have for these cases. And if we look at this, and this is just again another lung here that's lacking definition actually here, we've got a hypoattenuation of the lung really in this particular case here on this side relative to what is a normal lung going on here on CT, which obviously is an abnormal finding again. We don't know why, but obviously that can be investigated and looked at. And again, here is metal showing a distortion in the wing of this bird. So again, we just have to be aware that the slightest thing can cause a distortion. So I suppose the question is given this, is there any limitations here? And of course, well there are limitations here. When we're looking at evaluating the syrinx or the air sacs of a bird, for example, then I'm sampling every 1 millimeter. And if we look at this particular sample here, I've got an air sac running up here. Here's another air sac here, air sac there. But of course, those of you used to doing endoscopy, you'll know that these are thin, transparent membranes. If this air sac happens to fall in between my 1 millimeter slices, I ain't going to see it. I'm going to miss it. But equally, I'm going to miss it radiographically, of course. I can't use ultrasound to see it. The only way I can visualize this would be to go in endoscopically and look at the air sac itself. But we do have to be mindful that I suppose a normal air sac has a good chance of being missed. Whereas if it's unhealthy and thickened, you're probably going to see that because it's going to be more than a millimeter thick. And if we're looking at the syrinx, for example, and I would progress this down into looking at the bronchi as well of this bird, then obviously I'm slicing every millimeter. And in some cases, if you had, let's suggest you had a syringeal aspergilloma that healed and responded to treatment and maybe had some physical debridement, you might have some scar tissue left. You might have a bit of a flap left. And if that's the case, it's decidedly possible you might miss that because, again, I'm taking a 1 millimeter section of my trachea, and if the bulk of that flappy bit happens to fall in between those 2 millimeter slices, I might not see that. And we do, of course, still boil down to the fact that if you've got a fulminating aspergillus in your air sac, I can't see that on CT. I can guess, I can predict, I can be, it's a duck, it looks like a duck, you probably have a duck, but I don't know this. If I'm doing serology for aspergillus, for what good it is, again, I don't know. But if I see it with my own eyes, then I do know. But maybe CT pushes this into being plan B when we pause and reflect at the anatomical extent of damage or alteration so we can modify and say, what is our prognosis before we anaesthetize you? Maybe I'm going to stabilize you first and do that. Maybe this is plan B, not necessarily plan A. And if we have a little look now at video 5, this will give us a good guide to the sort of level of changes that you can see on here. And I'm going to run this a few times, and I would encourage you to bring up video 5 onto to full screen for this one. We're going to run through it again, and what I want you to do now is to focus on the trachea on this particular case, run down the trachea, spot where you get the syrinx forming, so the muscular syringeal body, spot where you get the bifurcation into the bronchi, and then trace the bronchi down through into the lungs and out through the ostia. And this is the sort of detailed information that you're going to miss on endoscopy, that you're going to miss radiographically. Much as we've been through and shown you the detail on the lung field itself as how good that is, this is where you want to say, what is the nature and extent of damage to your syrinx or bronchi? And this is the video that's going to show you that. So again, I'll play again a couple of times just so you can see, but this is a really, really nice view of following and tracking those down through to see what happens. We're going to go again. And you don't get this detail with any other imaging modality. This is, when you're looking at a bird that's more dyspneic than you think, in a lot of cases, it's plugged a bronchus, or there's pathology behind the syrinx down that bronchus that you just cannot see. And I suppose the next sort of circumstance that you've got is tracheal strictures. We're going to show you the next couple of videos of that in a second. But on here, what we've got here is, of course, here's your trachea, and this is a mass of soft tissue density, let's call it that, in the tracheal lumen. And again, this is saying, okay, there's something that shouldn't be here. When you're looking endoscopically, of course, it may be you can look at the front of this, but how far back it goes, how what nature of extent we've got here is maybe lacking because I cannot get behind it. I might be able to get behind it, but trying to poke my scope through the middle of this might be quite difficult. I might be quite scared. I'm going to do trauma. It might bleed at me. Okay, you're going to have an air sac tube in this bird anyway, but obviously there may be problems with going through and seeing that. Equally, from a CT point of view, much as I can get this without anaesthetizing you, I'm doing millimeter slices, and it might be that this stricture is not completely in view because I'm doing millimeter slices on that sample. So again, let's have a little look at video 6, and this will just give us a guide as to what's going on here. So again, we've got the head CT going down here, trying to follow that trachea down. So that's what we need to be watching as we go down through that process. Have a look at video 7, and again, we've got the tube in place here, so we can. This is now anaesthetized, because of course, for this you may want to. You can see the tube going down, following it all the way down. And then obviously you can get to the point you can say, okay, this is where the stricture is. So again, with these conchus, if they wiggle, you may completely interfere with your ability to detect a tracheal stricture or foreign body or things like that, and anaesthesia will allow you to do that. I suppose for me with these, I still would be going down the conscious route. I think in this day and age, with our refinement in technique, you'll get better answers. The downside of having to secure the airway to go and hunt for this on CT, or even doing it, from a point of view of anaesthesia, is you've got tracheal damage from the airway you've put in here. That's going to impair your ability to know what pathology was there genuinely before it was intubated and what pathology was iatrogenic with the re-intubation that you've done. Bearing in mind, for a stricture case, this is going to be iatrogenic from 5 days ago anyway. So for me, for these, it would be probably a conscious CT. And then if I wanted to evaluate it further, I'd be air sac tubing and then going in endoscopically per os, but I wouldn't be securing an airway in these per os, as it were, into the trachea, because of iatrogenic damage. So I think when we're looking at where CT fits into your bird cases, respiratory, absolutely. With the right machine and good restraint, conscious is fine for tracheas and for sinuses. For your lung fields, you should be pretty much okay in anything because your lungs aren't moving, and obviously you do get good GI signs as well. That is the end of today's webinar, but we do have a question that's been fed in, looking at the relative costs of procedures. And I think that's an interesting point. Depending on whether you're referring a case in for CT or you have CT on site, I suppose is one factor. And I'm guessing from our point of view, when we're looking at CT in the birds, doing a conscious mousetrap CT, the cost of those is around the £450 mark. And you think, okay, that is a reasonable chunk of money. Conversely, let's suggest I was had a bird in and I was thinking, you know what, I'm going to have to anaesthetize you, get you safe under anaesthetic, get some radiographs of you whilst you're anaesthetized. I've then got to recover you from that anaesthetic. Okay, you're probably going to be an inpatient anyway, so hospitalizing you maybe isn't a crisis because you're an inpatient. Although, to be fair, some of our CT patients do come to us as a day patient. So a lot of the, say it was a deer falcon and we thought it had aspergillus and it was on treatment and we want to know the extent of pathology, we might run that through the CT with a hood on a perch, get a diagnosis of the nature and extent of pathology change. We'd make the leap of faith it had Aspergillus anyway and would be sent home on treatment, but we can then reevaluate how that pathology or how the anatomical change varies over time for effectiveness. So some of those would be a day patient coming through. But for a sick bird, then it would be an inpatient anyway. But even so, you're balancing the cost of a general anaesthetic, maybe with increased peri-anaesthesia care of that patient versus what you would do if it was just an inpatient that hadn't been anaesthetized, and the cost of two radiographs. So depending on what you charge in practice, let's suggest you're going to be charging £100, £150 for two radiographs, bird anaesthetic, probably another £100 going on there. Maybe you're putting an IV line in, something like that. You might be around the £300 mark for a bird anaesthetic, take x-rays. For an extra £150, I'm giving you so much more detail than you'd ever get with a non-invasive procedure that doesn't require an anaesthetic. So in our circumstance, certainly looking at the rabbits, for example, where we've got contrast running through these as standard, we're CTing rabbits now. We're not x-raying them because there's no point x-raying, it's not indicated. And for the birds, more and more now, we're using the CT with the sort of refined technique that we now have got with the better machine to get far more detailed images than we would otherwise. You do get limitations with it, being honest with you, when you get it dealing with budgies and things like that, because 1 millimetre in a budgie is much more significant than 1 millimetre in a cockatoo or 1 millimetre in a goshawk. But you'd have the same with radiography as well. We just, you know, for the small birds, we do a high resolution CT of all of the bird to get the maximum definition that we can do. That is the end of the webinar. I'm now going to pass you back to Daisy.
On behalf of Webinar Club, I'd like to thank Kevin for an excellent webinar today. The recording and the certificate for this webinar will be available in the next few days in the members area of Webinar Club. Thank you all for attending. That's the end of the webinar.